You're listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Kamajis, a licensed clinical social worker with a multi-state online therapy practice. I have a passion for empowering women and mom therapists to break free of the fear, overwhelm, and oppressive systems that hold them back from taking action and building the private practice of their dreams. My goal is for you to boldly believe in yourself as a clinician and business owner. If you're looking for a place to learn practice building strategy and skill while also claiming your own power as a woman and a therapist, then you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. Welcome to this week's episode of the Raise to Empower podcast. I'm really excited for today's episode because this is one that feels really personal for me. And I know that this is an episode that's going to provide so much for listeners in a variety of areas. I have struggled in a variety of capacities with breastfeeding each of my children due to food reactivity. And you've heard me share in other episodes about my oldest son having severe food allergies and the ups and downs that we've had with that. But really, the struggle that we've had with his food allergies and his reactivity, it started all the way back at the very beginning of my breastfeeding journey with him. And we will get into those details in a little bit. But the reality is it really took a major toll on my mental health. And that carried through to my other experiences with my other babies and their feeding journeys. And so if you work with moms in your practice, whether they're in the postpartum period currently, or they have children that are older that maybe they did go through breastfeeding or just feeding in general that they've had struggles with, this episode is really important so that you can have knowledge about what your clients may be going through and an amazing tool and resource to help support them. But this episode is also for you listeners who have also struggled with your own feeding journeys with your babies to know that you aren't alone and that there is support here for you too. So I'm extremely excited and honored to introduce my guest today, Dr. Trility Paulin. Dr. Trill is a distinguished cellular and molecular biologist with a focus on the molecular component of human milk. She is an Operation Iraqi Freedom veteran, currently serving her 19th year in the Army National Guard, and is the CEO and co-founder of Free to Feed. Dr. Trill's passion for empowering parents on their lactation journey was ignited after her own daughters experienced food reactions to proteins transferred from her diet to breast milk. Determined to provide the research, resources, and support she lacked during that challenging time, she founded Free to Feed alongside Dr. Lashana Hamilton. Dr. Trill's groundbreaking work in breastfeeding and food reactivity has garnered grant funding from renowned institutions, including the National Science Foundation. She has collaborated with renowned research institutions such as Stanford University and the University of Idaho, contributing significantly to the expanding body of research surrounding lactation. Her innovative contributions include the invention of the first at-home test kit to detect allergens in human milk, which is currently in the manufacturing phase. This test kit is part of the Free to Feed's comprehensive offering, which includes an educational support package, a tracking app, and personal consultations, all designed to support and empower parents on their lactation journey. Dr. Trill, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Ashley.
I know you said at the beginning, you're like, you don't have to read that whole bio, but I just find it just so empowering and inspiring to just hear all that you have done and to personally have benefited from your work. So I'm really honored to get to have you on today's show. And I'm really excited for listeners to get to know you.
Yeah. And you did an amazing job going through it too. I would like to hire you as the MC for every event that I do from now on.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So, you know, we'll get into kind of how Free to Feed came to be and what that is. But listeners of this show know that I always ask guests to kind of share, you know, how did you get into the line of work that you're in? How did you decide I want to become a PhD in, you know, molecular biology?
Yeah, that's a great question. And honestly, not one that I get asked a whole lot. So I love the question. When I was younger, I probably, maybe like many of your listeners, I wanted to be a marine biologist, which I think like many like teenage girls, like that was right, the space.
It's the closest thing to like a mermaid, right? Like right. In the ocean.
Totally, totally. How do I be the embodiment of a mermaid? Exactly. And so I knew like science though was like the direction I wanted to go. And so I joined the military when I was 17 before I graduated from high school. And I started out getting a bachelor's degree in biology, and I wasn't entirely sure what I was going to do with it yet. But then I deployed. So I deployed when I was 19, and I turned 20 overseas while I was in Baghdad. And when I was there, I really got to experience the other culture that we were in. And when I got home, I really took those things to heart, and I really wanted to like make the most of the opportunities that were afforded to me where I was. And like now these extra benefits that you get from being a veteran now. And so I was like, I'm gonna get a double, degree. I'm gonna go biology and chemistry, really focus on the science side because I love science. And at the same time, because like that career was headed its direction, also my military career was headed up an entirely different direction. So the irony being that like at the same time I'm getting a bachelor's degree in chemistry and in biology, I reclassed is what they call it, but got a new job in the army as an engineer. So like kind of the, similar brain waves, but different fields. And to this day, now my two careers have completely forked and they're two very different things. But on the science side of things, in my like last 2 years of my undergrad degree, I had the opportunity to work in a cancer research lab. And so I just by happen chance, I was doing like an interview with one group of professors. They were like doing interviews for like grad school and med school and stuff like that. It was super cool that they were doing it for us, this little panel. And so I was talking to these professors. One of them was my genetics professor. And when we got done, she was like, I didn't know those things about you, right? But before we did this interview, would you be interested in working in my lab? I feel like you'd be a really good fit in my lab. And I honestly needed money to get through school, obviously like join the military. So that's a part of my journey. And I was like, well, I would really love to, but like I can't take any like volunteer positions. And she was, oh no, I'll pay you more than what you're getting paid in your other job right now. And I was like, yeah, sign me up. And I fell in love. I started doing cancer research in her lab under another undergrad and under her direction, focused on leukemia work, and it was really fulfilling, right? And I got to share my research at conferences and really felt like I was making that I could make a big difference to a lot of people. And so I decided that that was the direction I wanted to go with my career. Just from there, ended up moving to Tampa, Florida. And while in Florida, I got a volunteer position at Moffitt Cancer Center. I eventually got into the PhD program at University of South Florida and then focused on ovarian cancer while I was doing my PhD there. Really specifically around like how to help people who have had ovarian cancer be able to be retreated with chemotherapy agents that they've already been exposed to, because usually we can't retreat them with the same drugs. And I really love it. I love the research. I love the science part. I'm super nerdy. I'm very much an introvert. So like put me in a lab and I'm just in my happy little space. And I'm so lucky that like I found that for me, like this kind of perfect fit for like my personality and really what I love doing.
Now, do you still work in that area while also doing free to feed and working with the National Guard?
Yeah, so the irony, when you finish your PhD, most people and like many people like working through their career may not even realize like really most PhDs like their whole goal is to not be in the lab anymore, right? In some capacity is to like run a lab, right? And I didn't want to go into the academic space because it felt like my PI, my boss, the professor that I worked under, all she did all day, every day was write grants. And I was like, I don't really want to do that. Like, I really want to do science. I'm going to go into industry. I'm going to go like the biotech route. And joke's on me though, because now I own a biotech company and it feels like 90% of what I do is write grants. I will say I do have a lab space and I do get to work in the lab, but it's very trying. And for the last 6 years, you know, I've worked as the CEO of Free to Feed, and so a lot of that, and the wearing many hats as, you know, the founder of a company, has pulled me away from the lab. And to be like totally transparent, my whole goal from the very beginning to right now is that with our next fundraise, which should, I'm going to cross like my fingers, my toes, my eyeballs, should be closing and finishing over in the next couple of months. With that next fundraise, I'll be hiring a CEO so that I can go
Oh,
back
exciting.
to being a scientist, which is what I really, really love and what I want to be able to do.
Well, and we'll get into what all the nitty-gritties of Feed to Feed, and I'm just so excited for people to learn about this because I did not learn about it till just this past October. And it has just helped me so much. But I know a little bit about your story, partially from the lactation consultant that I worked with this go around with this baby, and my journey with her food reactivity. And I know a little bit of it from stuff you shared on social media. For those who don't know you, for those who don't know anything about food reactivity, share with us a little bit about like how did your awareness of this issue start with your own experience?
Yeah, so kind of perfect segue from my career journey because it was in my last year of grad school that I learned about this. So even as a whole protein expert, like that's my whole job is learning and understanding and studying proteins. I had no idea that foods that we consumed could transfer to our breast in a way that could elicit an allergic reaction, a reaction in our children. And so we have our first daughter in my last year of grad school, which, like, side note, super fun time to have a baby while you're writing a dissertation. I don't know why I thought that was a good idea. I was like, this is the perfect time to have a baby. So did that. And our oldest was born and she was inconsolable. She cried all of the time. And I took her, you know, to the pediatrician and was like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but like, this can't be normal because no one would ever have another baby if this fit, right? Like, no way, no possible chance. And we were told, like, yeah, your daughter has colic. Good luck with that. Like, high five, sent home. Really, and that was it. And I was like, really? Like, we just let her scream for 20 hours a day and there's nothing we can do about it. And when we woke up one morning, she's about 3 weeks old. She was covered in eczema from head to toe, and she had a massively bloody diaper, just like straight blood. And so, of course, like I freaked out because as you do.
What the
Yeah, exactly. And I took this diaper and I ran back to the pediatrician and I was like, okay, well, now I know why she's been screaming at me for the last 3 weeks. What do I do now? And even at that point, like really kind of dismissed, which blew my mind because I'm like, something's very wrong. And
What did you think was wrong at that point?
honestly, so my husband has ulcerative colitis. And so the very first thing that I messaged him because I woke up, he was already at work when I woke up with this diaper. So also I was alone. I took a picture of him, I sent it to him, and I was like, our daughter has ulcerative colitis. Was what I thought was that she has a irritable bowel disease. So for those who may be listening who aren't familiar, it's very similar to Crohn's, only it is restricted to the large intestine. And so I was like, she has an autoimmune disease. You know, she's gonna have to go on a biologics like medication. Like this is awful, just spiraling, right? That's what I thought. And took her in and like still like largely dismissed, right? Just kind of like, ah, yeah, this happens kind of thing. Excuse me, what do you mean this happens? And what? And I was told that, yeah, it is possible that she's having a reaction to something that you're eating. And that was like the first moment that this whole kind of world was even exposed to me at all. And so I was told it's most likely that it's cow's milk. Try taking cow's milk protein out of your diet. And I will be the first to admit that I love cheese. Love it. I love cheese. All the good stuff. And there was a little bit where I was like, I don't know. And they, you know, the other option was a hypoallergenic formula. And quite frankly, the formula was too expensive as a grad student. to even consider affording. And so I was like, okay, gonna take cow's milk out of my diet. And she spiraled. She got worse really quickly. We eventually ended up getting a referral to a GI because all that was coming out of her little body was blood, and her skin started getting so bad that it was weeping and infected. And I just kept being told yep, just keep cow's milk out of your diet and keep doing what you're doing. And I was like,
yeah,
this is not working. And being not believed when I said no, I for sure took cow's milk out of my diet. I'm reading everything. I am literally living off of nothing right now. And eventually she was admitted to the hospital because she got so bad. And the only way that they had to confirm that she had a food allergy, that she was having reactions, was by doing what they called a starvation diet, where they literally did not feed her for 24 hours. And let me say, is the literal physical embodiment of the food.
Oh yeah.
I ended up, because they didn't have another space for me, I ended up pumping in the stairwell of this hospital because I just remember being in there at 2 a.m. crying because I couldn't pump in the room because it would upset her, rightfully so. And we're, however many hours into this, I'm pumping, I'm crying. I'm like, I don't want to eat. I don't know what to eat. I don't know if I'm ever going to breastfeed again. Is this completely pointless? And at the end of 24 hours, they came back in and we're like, well, she got a little bit better after we didn't feed her for 24 hours. So it's a food allergy. Okay.
So now what?
Now what? And again, it said the only option is this hypoallergenic formula. And so I started asking the questions at that stage of okay, well, if I can't afford this formula and we don't qualify for assistance, we make just enough not to qualify. And my insurance isn't going to pay for it. TRICARE is not going to cover. What do I do? And, is there any possible way, if you can make a hypoallergenic formula, could I make a hypoallergenic breast milk? I had no idea what I was talking about, but something, right? Is there any way to keep breastfeeding? And I was told hesitant, maybe, but we can't test her to tell you what she's allergic to.
Right.
So here's a laundry list, a literal list of things. Maybe she's allergic to one or more of these. Take them all out of your diet and see what happens. And then we were discharged. And
you're left to just figure it out for yourself.
Just figure it out. And it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
I will say that I do not recommend this for other people. So I want to little asterisk caveat that. I went on a really strict, really broad elimination diet and I breastfed her for a year like that. Wow. And it had so many impacts on my mental and physical health. I lost so much weight. My mental health was in the garbage. I was stressed all of the time. I somehow managed to graduate during this time, which you can just imagine what a mess.
Oh, yeah, because you're still in school during all of this.
Yeah, I'm still in grad school during all of this. I'm defending. I'm trying to graduate. And I really just did looking back, I really just did the army / mom thing. I just put my head down and got it done. And it wasn't until my second daughter was born that I popped my head out of the sand, and was because she started presenting with symptoms very early as well. But this time with upper GI symptoms where she was vomiting. And this time around, I was like, all right, where's all the people and the resources and the research? And there's got to be more 3 years later. And what I found were lots of other families this time around, other people who were, so I wasn't alone. I thought I was all alone. I felt very isolated. So what I found were I'm not alone, but there isn't all of these resources that there needs to be.
It's parent to parent support for one another.
Yep, exactly. And I started free to feed when I was only, I think, 3 to 4 weeks postpartum with the second baby, with our youngest. And
what a great time to start a business.
Oh yeah. My timing throughout this entire story journey, my timing is just chef's kiss. Awful, truly awful. And in all the irony in the whole wide world, at the same time that I had my youngest, through a series of strange events that had happened, I was working for a dairy processing facility. And so I removed cow's milk and all this other stuff from my diet, breastfeeding my second baby back to work way too early. And I was teaching lab techs how to test cow's milk for cross-contamination of other allergens in our facility. So imagine like a giant vat where we're running almond milk and then we clean it really well and then we run cow's milk on it. Well, we would have to prove to the FDA that we didn't accidentally get almond in the cow's milk because that could cause a reaction. And so there is a simple little test. It's just like a pregnancy test that we would use and just like put it in there like a dipstick. And I am breastfeeding. I'm hungry. I'm on this elimination diet. I'm making millions of pounds of cottage cheese that I can't eat. Like, what is happening with my life? And I have this moment, this like really stereotypical, what if, like, and how in the world are we doing this for cows, but we don't do this for women? And so I took this silly little test strip and I ran into a closet and I squirted my breast milk on it because I was just desperate. At best. I was like, maybe. And it didn't work. Like the control line didn't work on it. And so I called the company and I was like, and of course I'm the quality manager at this facility. So I'm very familiar with the rep at this point. I'm like, hey, Tony, it's Trill. I just called because I put my breast milk on your test strip and it didn't work. I don't want to talk about it. And he was like, hi, Trill. You what? What did you do? That's not what that's for. And that was my first partnership with that company. And that was almost exactly 6 years ago now. And that's been kind of the journey of like, there has to be something better for families. This is egregious that there's not.
Well, and a couple of things as you were talking, like one, I can resonate so much with your story. You know, there's certain moments in my journey with my oldest that like, they're just like images ingrained. And like that, the first episode of just the head to toe hives and eczema where like you'll never like unsee those things, right? Like the first time you saw that diaper, like you will never unsee those. And so I resonate so much with all of that. And you talk about the impact of mental health. You know, for me, I was dealing with all of this. So my husband is in the Coast Guard and he was away for months 2 through 6. So like I'd started to have issues with all of this probably around 3 or 4 weeks, similar to your daughter. And so I was dealing with a lot of this beforehand, but it really got going after he left. And it was, like you said, just put your head down. We were in survival mode. I was solo parenting. I wasn't in my own house, right? So I was like, just got to get through. And it really wasn't until I had my second son and he started to show some signs and symptoms. Like we already had a food allergy diagnosis at this point for the oldest. We were managing that. Like we've been through the trauma of like his first reaction, right? Like we were like, okay, we're good. Yeah. And then I have this new baby and I'm like, yep, we're just going to try the breastfeed. And it was when he started showing some of the mucusy stools and the excessive vomit that I had this like visceral reaction and this panic set in of, oh my gosh, like, what do we do? And it wasn't until that happened that I realized, oh, I had like a real mental health issue going on with everything that had happened with my oldest son that I had just never dealt with. Talk about, if you don't mind, like, for you, what were some of the things where you say like my mental health was a mess? Like, I can talk from my personal experience what that was, but like for you, what were some of the challenges you found with your own mental health?
Yeah. I really appreciate you kind of like diving further into that because it's so important. This journey is so nuanced. And there's really, in my experience anyway, there's no other type of situation in which like food that you consume will hurt your child.
Yeah.
In like real time, like it's, there's a lot to untangle there. And so, in my experience, really like in the moment with my oldest, there's large chunks of time that are gone, for me that I don't remember, which is not uncommon, right? It's very common in, you know, a traumatic response in your body to, tuck those away, right? Tuck those memories away. Yep. And in some ways, like I realized that that's my brain protecting itself, but it's also like so sad to think about like the memories that are gone, that like I can't recall. And because those are our newborn years, right? Our
Yeah.
newborn months, and that's really, really sad. And so there's that piece. There's that like feeling like I didn't get that experience with her. And you know, the beauty that everybody talks about. I'm like, oh,
Yeah.
what beauty? And then the other pieces are also, you know, the sleeplessness
Yeah.
is huge toll on your mental health, a huge toll on your relationships, on everything around you. And then your like foundational relationship with food in this particular situation can be like incredibly just destroyed, right? Like
Yeah.
I would have moments where like I was like, I would rather go hungry than have to go
Yeah.
into the kitchen right now and like figure out what I'm going to eat that like meets all of
Yeah.
these crazy requirements, like
Right.
fits this Venn diagram of like what I can eat, and
Right.
it feels like it's a pinpoint of like nothing. Like, what can I eat? Like
Yeah.
a bowl of plain quinoa. Cool.
Right, right.
And to this day now, I'm like, if I never see like coconut milk for the rest of my life, it will be too soon. It will be too soon because I don't even like coconut milk, but I like lived off of it for a year.
Yeah.
And so it like foundationally broke my relationship with food, not only in the moment then, but then in the future, what I didn't realize, it felt later would be a struggle because I couldn't not eat if I had it
Right.
available to me, right? Like I spent so
Yeah.
long having something in front of me. We would, you know,
You
go
were
in and
deprived of it
out. I was
for so
deprived,
long.
but now I'm
Yeah.
like, well, if I can't eat it, I have to eat it, right?
Exactly.
And so I just yo-yoed between
Yeah.
losing way too much weight, gaining a ton of weight, being, you know, the heaviest that I've been, and
Yeah.
everywhere in between. And that was really, really a struggle. And then similarly, that like I didn't realize how ingrained all of those mental health issues were until our second daughter was born and she started presenting with symptoms. And literally the first thought in my mind was, I'm not going to survive this.
Yes.
Like
Yes.
I won't make it another
Yeah.
day. Like I won't survive. And that was shocking to me. And it was scary to me too.
Yeah.
Like that was the thought in my head of like, you
Yeah.
won't survive this. And I've got a brand new little, you know, baby girl at home, and I'm literally like, this isn't happening. I can't survive.
Right. Right.
And now, you know, and I talked about this, you know, on our platforms about the kind of triggering response. And the interesting thing about my background is I also know a lot about PTSD because of my military experience. But it's those moments of like when you go to change a diaper, but like your hand is clammy and shaky because you're scared of what you're going to open up. It's the moments of like opening the fridge and like just feeling like that depression, like just kind of sink into your bones because you're like,
Yeah.
I don't even like, I can't eat another carrot stick. I can't do it.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah.
those like those moments that are it's when you know you go to give your baby a bath and you see like this little dot on their shoulder and you're like, oh no, right? Your mind immediately goes to alert mode and
Yeah.
survival and emergency mode, and
Yeah.
it's actually just like a mosquito bite, but
Yeah.
you don't know that. And in the moment, like your blood pressure spikes, your heart rate spikes, you're
Yeah.
sweaty, you're clammy, you're assuming the worst. And now this like what should be a beautiful moment of your little kid jumping into the bath and you having fun
Yeah.
with them is instead you spiraling. And so I think it's one, I want to talk about those items because I need other people to know that like that is real and it really
Right.
could exist. And also that like you're not weird if you
Yeah.
experience
Yeah.
those things, right? Just to kind of like pull back the veil on like I've worked with literally thousands of families and it's very, very infrequently that they don't have those kind of issues.
Yeah.
And so you're not strange if you're experiencing those things and that you absolutely deserve, you know, help and assistance through working
Yeah.
through those items, either during if you can, but
Yeah.
I've been in the trenches and often we can't. But on the other side of it, if you are on the other side, whether it's been a few weeks or a few years, it's worth
Yeah.
working through.
Yeah. Well, and there's just like this level of hypervigilance that comes that you know, you think about when you have a new baby, there's already a level of hypervigilance. If am I going to drop the baby? Like, can they hold their head up? Right. Like, are they sleeping? Here comes the older kids with germs. Right. Like, so we're already in that state. And then when you have a baby that is extremely fussy, inconsolable, something seems off, and you know, you go through the process of you're checking every single diaper and looking and hunting what's in here, is there anything, right? That like it becomes this, I'm on guard even more than I was. And I think you don't realize is it until you're in it, right? Like someone could tell me about this experience, until you experience yourself, it's really hard to understand where something that used to be enjoyable of going out to eat is miserable. And you're like, and impossible, right? You're like, I would just rather stay home. Like, I don't want to go anywhere because I'm having to calculate everything and I have to double check everything. And I have to look at online. Do they actually have these ingredients? And
Gotta interrogate the waiter for 30 minutes, yes, before I can order something.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it becomes like this burden. And you know, clients of mine that have struggled with feeding issues with their babies, you know, I was trying to reassure some of them, saying like, there's already, you know, whether you're breastfeeding, bottle feeding, formula feeding, there is you're in it when you have a young baby, right? Because how often are they feeding? Okay, you're stuck to that clock, right? And if you are breastfeeding or pumping, like you physically, like you are the one attached to it in many ways. But then you add in this extra layer of, well, now we are trying to figure out, why is my baby like inconsolable? Why is my baby not sleeping through the night? Why is my baby excessively vomiting, even though the doctors tell me like, well, they can't do that, but you know they are, right? Like, why is my baby not gaining weight? And so then you add all of that in, and every feed, every diaper, every, you're watching the clock because, okay, they have to eat at this time because they're not gaining weight, and you've got, right? It becomes this added stress and pressure on top of what already can just naturally be stressful. And so it wears on you, because again, it's just this like level of hypervigilance where you can't really settle from it. And you know, you talk about, you know, missing out on experiences and memories. And it's interesting for me, I actually feel like my middle child, who ironically, we ended up on the specialty formula, he has zero allergies, but I had more of like an anxious experience around him because I had not processed everything I had gone through. And so I have a lot of stuff that I don't remember from his infancy because of that. But I have an 8-month old now, and she has had food reactivity. We are just starting to reintroduce some things into my diet. I remember, you know, when she was just a couple months old, just kind of crying and like saying out loud, like, why can't I just have like a normal baby? And that may sound, you know, kind of callous, but it's, you're like, you talk about people like, oh, my baby just sleeps on my chest. I'm like, I don't know what that is. Right. Like, or, oh, my baby, like I have this, yes, breastfeeding is hard, but like, it's really rewarding. I'm like, well, it's really stressful for me. Right. And so that there's these opportunities that I remember even at certain points where she would be so fussy and so inconsolable, where I would say, I hate feeling like this because I don't want to wish away these really special moments, but I also can't wait till she's a toddler and I'm not having to second guess everything I'm eating on top of her. And it's this weird dichotomy where you're like, I don't want to be in this, but I also want to be in this. And it wears on you.
Yep. And for me, I also experienced that, like, where war on other relationships too, because you would see that, right? And, you know, your friends who may also have children, being like, oh, we're all going to go out for chips and salsa. Yeah. And you're like, I can't do that. Like, where I can come and I'm going to bring my own salsa. Like,
And
to see that, and it's normal to feel like a jealousy around that, like, seeing other journeys that are not similar to yours, and being like, you know, why exactly, like you said, like, why can't I have that? Why is that my journey? Like, that looks really nice. And so, yeah, I definitely relate to that as well.
Are you a mental health practitioner looking to streamline your administrative tasks and get rid of the overwhelm of running your practice? Look no further than Simple Practice, the electronic health record designed with you in mind. Simple Practice isn't just another electronic health record. It's your secret weapon for simplifying the chaos. From scheduling appointments to billing and beyond, Simple Practice has everything you need to run your practice efficiently and effectively. With Simple Practice, you can finally reclaim your time and focus on what truly matters, your clients and your family. Gone are the days of scrambling to manage appointments and billing. Simple Practice handles it all seamlessly so you can spend less time stressing and more time connecting. With Simple Practice, you can schedule appointments with ease, send automated appointment reminders to reduce no-shows, and even conduct secure video sessions all within one platform. Plus, their HIPAA-compliant telehealth feature ensures that your client's privacy is always protected. Simple Practice also streamlines your billing process, allowing you to create and send professional invoices, accept credit card payments, and even submit insurance claims all with just a few clicks. Simple Practice has designed their platform to be intuitive and easy to use because they know that your time is precious and every moment counts. So whether you're squeezing in clients between school pickups and sports practices or catching up on paperwork during nap time, Simple Practice has your back. Join the ranks of empowered women and mom therapists who are revolutionizing their practice with Simple Practice. Ready to streamline your practice and simplify your life? Head over to bit.ly/AshleySimplePractice to start your 30-day free trial and get up to $200 off your paid subscription. Trust me, you won't know how you ever lived without it. We've all been told we need to network in our private practice, but no one actually tells us how to do it or what to say. Enter Comprehensive Connecting, effective scripts that expand your networking community and actually fill your online practice. This free guide will give you effective scripts to connect with fellow clinicians, medical professionals, and community stakeholders to build strong networking relationships that will help fill your practice. In this guide, you will get tips and tricks for building relationships that will lead to referrals in your practice, real-life examples of messages used to connect with referral sources, and customizable plug-and-send scripts for your specific practice needs. So download your free scripts guide today by going to bit.ly/compconnecting. You were talking about like the specialty formula. And so I'll just kind of share my experience with that because, you know, one of the things with family, when I tell them I'm right currently off of all wheat, soy, egg, and milk, I'm like, well, you know, can you just give the baby formula? And I don't think people understand formula is made with it's not just like cow's milk. It's not just breast milk. It has a lot of other things in it. And so, no, I can't just give the baby that because it has all the things in it that we're trying to figure out what she's reacting to. And so with my oldest, I did have a positive experience with the pediatrician that first kind of helped us figure out what was going on with him. And she gave us two different samples of specialty formula to trial. And there's a Facebook group that has been really helpful for me. Somebody had shared a table that showed that even some of these specialty formulas do have certain allergens in them. And so I knew, okay, this was still a component of this one and that this one didn't have these things in it. We trialed this one sample and within 2 hours, I was like, nope. The rash was all over. It was projectile vomit and it still had a component of dairy in it. We went to this other specialty formula and he did really well on it. We actually had to kind of like mix it at a higher calorie rate because he couldn't, he was just not gaining. But for people to understand, like, number one, this is not a kind of formula that I can go and buy off a shelf. We were extremely fortunate that we were able to get our doctor to put paperwork in to get TRICARE to approve all of it. I don't think it always was like that in the past, but we were able to do that for him and for my middle son. So it would have to be ordered through a durable medical equipment company and shipped to my house every month. Yeah. And so you would have to calculate how many bottles am I going to get out per can? How many cans are we going through a week? and then tell the doctor, this is what I need you to put this prescription in for. And the cans that we got, so we were on pure amino, and this, I want people to really understand this. So the cans you mix at a higher, like it's multiple scoops per ounces different than regular ones. So we would go through a can in 2.5 to 3 days. And that single can, when I would, if I had to go buy it like on Amazon or something like that, ranges from $50 to $60. One time we got sent with the shipping from the durable medical equipment company, what they were charging TRICARE for 1 month's supply was $1,200. $1,200 for formula for the month for my son. And he couldn't be on anything else but that. And so, you know, for families who don't have insurance that covers that, who cannot afford that, like we, there's no way we could have afforded that. The only other option then is for figuring out how mom can eliminate this from her breast milk. And so I wanted to just share that piece because it's so important that it's not just a simple, like, well, just don't breastfeed.
Just switch. And yeah. Yes, 1,000,000,000%. So important to mention. Like, yeah, I'd mentioned in our journey the fact that, like, we couldn't afford it. And we tried to go down the route of like getting it covered and couldn't get it covered. And which was a while ago, right? Like 9 years ago. The other pieces, as you mentioned, is like, one, some people, there are no formulas that don't contain one of their triggers, right? If your baby has an allergy to dairy, soy, and corn, finding or God forbid, like coconut and things like that. And yes, you may hear in some of the spaces that, well, it's so processed, it's so broken down, it won't elicit an allergic response. And that's not true. And in fact, it's even proven through lots of research, and even the FDA has statements on, yes, soy oil does contain fragments of proteins which elicit allergic responses in some people, depending on their sensitivity levels. And so, unfortunately, then parents are told like, oh, that's not possible, right? And we're just getting another level of dismissal and gaslighting of like, well, it's hypoallergenic, which means it can't possibly be allergic. You can't be allergic to it. And you're like, no, I saw the hives. We went through hours of talking, like, you have to come home with me now because baby this formula and you after. I've never wished for a doctor to have to come home with me until this type of journey. Like, no, you come home and you deal with them all night long. And so yes to that 100%. And then another like extra added layer on here that I have to mention too is that over the last handful of years, the scarcity of this formula, of these specialized formula, is a legit problem. So when we had the formula crisis, the formula shortage a few years ago, that has still continued to wax and wane over the last few years, like people aren't, the media isn't talking about it as much, but absolutely still a problem. As I'm like in it with this community and these families, is that like, as you mentioned, if you're not getting it shipped directly to your house, and even if you are, if it's not available, like, what are your options now?
Right.
You can't get a hold of it. And so, you know, we heard horror stories of parents traveling all up and down the state, right? In California, for example, going to every single store to try to find one can of pure amino for $60. It's going to last them 2.5 days, right?
Right.
Like, absolutely insane. And and that's a reality for some of these families. And it's scary. And so all to say that, like, for some, on one side of the coin, I always want to mention, like, for some, like, it's just straight up not an answer, not even an option, right, to switch the formula. And for some, like, we don't want to. And that's valid too, right? For some of us, we're like, no, I want to continue to breastfeed. I want to figure this out. And that's just as valid as well.
Right. So share with us a little bit about, I know we've touched about like free to feed, but I know there's multiple components to this. So like, if someone was like, what is free to feed? What would you tell them?
You're right. There are multiple components. It's nuanced, just like the journey is, which I think is interesting. So free to feed helps parents who are navigating food allergies. More often than not, we're working with kiddos who are 5 and under, because those are the kiddos who are most likely experiencing the type of symptoms and types of food reactions that can't be easily tested for, or tested for at all, quite frankly. And they are the least understood, least researched and least supported. And so that's the space that we focus on. And really, when I started Free to Feed, my initial goal was to create the first test system that would detect allergens in human milk, because I was like, this is some BS that we do this for cows and we don't do this for women. Why? This doesn't even make sense. And so I set out, I was like, I'm going to make it the first test system that at home you could test your milk and know what was in it in real time so that you could determine what your baby was reactive to. And so I set out to do that 6 years ago, not knowing how lacking we really were in the research side of things and how much work it would be to get to that point. And in the meantime, though, as I told everybody about what I was doing, because I'm somebody that's like, you know, in the startup space, people are like, don't tell anybody what you're doing because they're going to come and scoop your idea. And I'm like, please do. Please scoop my idea. I'll join you. You can do the work and raise the money and be the CEO. And I'll just do the science on the background. But nobody scooped me. And it's been 6 years. So if you're listening, like, call me. And so in the midst of that, in the midst of like telling everybody, right, on social media, anybody I meet, all of those things, in order to like help boost this problem and help raise awareness and get help fixing this problem, overwhelmingly parents would come to me and tell me what they want, tell me what they need, right? And it was like, oh yeah, I wish I had that too, right? Like, I wish I had easy access to a registered dietitian that I could meet with virtually to talk about my micronutrients. And the fact that, like, literally almost a decade later, I still have problems with my dental health because of the deficiencies I had when I was breastfeeding my oldest daughter. Like, I would have done some crazy things to get access, easy access to a registered dietitian that I could just meet with virtually to be like, what am I missing in my diet? And how do I get in with this limited list of foods that I'm eating? And overwhelmingly parents were like, will you just teach me what's happening in my body? Treat me like an adult. Teach me and give me the tools that I need to be able to navigate this with as much confidence as I possibly can. And I was like, yeah, I think we can do that. And so we have a whole team now, a whole suite of professionals who meet with families one-on-one to help through those journeys, the elimination, the reintroduction, the nutrients, all those nuanced pieces. And then just building on top of that, when parents were like, okay, that's great, but you know, I don't have time to meet with somebody one-on-one. Can you teach a class that I can just watch anytime? Totally. So we did the Starting Solids for Food Reactive Babies class. Can you make an app? I don't know how, but I will figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
We made an app. Right now we're in the beta phases of making an AI tool that would allow you to say, hey, you know, I'm on this elimination diet and I want dinner. Give me some recipe ideas. Or like, you know, just an AI tool that will help with that day to day. Or here's a picture of an ingredient deck. All the things that like people message me on Instagram where they're like, hey, is there soy in this? And I'm like, yeah, unfortunately that word means soy. I'm really sorry. And even we're in the middle of collecting all of the data so that it can also do image identification so that you can upload a picture of a diaper and it will tell you whether or not it is likely a reactivity issue or not. And same thing with skin. And so that's in beta right now. But I think altogether, currently available, we have an app, we have consultation services, we have several education courses that are available online, including for professionals. And we have, I even made a cookbook a few years ago, which is absolutely crazy. I wrote my own cookbook. And it's been, you know, just this like the biggest labor of love, because it's this combo of like, I wish I had this too. I wish I had a cookbook. Because I remember going to like Barnes and Noble or and on Amazon and being like, I just want like a cookbook. And I'm like, well, I can't use any of these recipes. And then I'm trying to change things in the recipes and then they don't turn out. And
it
then
doesn't turn out the way.
Literally broke our waffle maker. And I was like, I'm never buying another waffle maker for my whole life. This is awful. Just the most awful recipes. And, so the good news is, that's not what's in the cookbook. It's what actually worked on the other side of it. And so, you know, now we've built all these things and, what's so interesting is that we have all of these resources and tools and now research, you know, grant-funded research. That's all come to fruition. And now as of, so interesting that we're talking today, because literally this week, my very first test kit finished, completed, manufactured, and shipped to the lab this week that we have in-house. It's right in the other room right now.
That is
It's
so
a new first test
exciting.
kit, and it's super exciting. It's really crazy because I'm like, okay, it's here. Now there's so
Yeah.
much to do. So our next,
Yeah.
we have the test kit now, and our next steps is a human factor study where we got a grant from the NSF where we're going to take the test kit to a number of families to have them tell us, like, I love this about the test kit. I hate this. I wish this was bigger. I wish this was easier. All those like little nuanced things. And
Yeah.
then it's my job to close that fundraise so that we can go out and do a big batch manufacturing and get this out to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the way that you described it when I met you at the Food Allergy Research and Education Conference last year is like, picture like the strips that you can test if you like have alcohol in your breast milk, that these will be able to help you determine, is it just specific allergens or is it like any allergen is available?
Yep. So one, they're much more accurate than the little alcohol test strips. Want to mention that because those are not known for their accuracy. And two, they test for specific allergens. And so the very first test system that we have detects beta-lactoglobulin in human milk. And then the second version that we're working on right now actually tests up to the top 12 allergens. And it
Okay.
shows a different line and a different color. It's a, what's
For
called a
each of them.
multiplex for each of them. And so you can
Yeah.
either look at that and say like, okay, yep, purple and yellow. So I currently have egg and wheat in my breast milk right now, with also the ability to just take a picture of it and our app will auto upload the results as well as like the date and the time. And then at the same time, our families are tracking symptoms, right? So at 2 p.m., there was this rash. We were up all night with colic, things
Yeah.
like that. And what happens is our algorithm then marries that information, like what is baby actually intaking? Because not everything we eat ends up in the breast, which is
Right.
important. And what are the symptomologies? And then our AI can marry that information that gives you a correlation score that says, based on correlation and timing, this is what's most likely eliciting a response for your
Wow.
particular baby. That way you're not going on a blind elimination diet anymore. You're specifically removing only the allergens that are most likely to elicit that response. And you can test your subsequent milk so that if you're traveling to the fair
Yeah.
conference and you want to eat freely and you want to know when your milk is clear again, you can. Or if most of us have a milk stash in our freezer by the time
Right.
we've gotten to this point and you have no idea what you were eating. What were you eating? Yes, everything. Because that was
Right,
postpartum.
because you and you're not marking it back then
No.
when you weren't
Why would
concerned
you?
about it.
And
Yeah.
so you want to go into your freezer stash. You want to be able to test that milk. And so that's what this is for. This is so parents can keep breastfeeding if they choose to and have the support and data behind them to move through that process.
Yeah. And I think for listeners to, you know, again, if you're in this, you get how like helpful that would be. But for listeners, if you are supporting parents who are going through this, what that would be able to do is to take away a big chunk of that hypervigilance. Not that you don't still have to be hypervigilant, but when you are like, I know I'm eating clean, I'm not eating my things. And then the baby reacts, you're like, you spiral because you're like, where did it come from? Or what
New
is it something
trigger.
new? Yeah. And so it can be extremely alarming and disturbing in some ways for you because you're like, I'm so sure that I'm doing all the right things. So this is a tool that I see as a way to just help almost like catch your breath. You're like, okay, I can know exactly what is going on in my breast milk. And no, like, it's not that thing that I thought was they're reacting to. It's actually something else.
Yeah, for sure. And other, you know, scenarios of like, very often we work with families who think that they've effectively removed cow's milk or
Yeah.
soy, and it's so hard to do. And so they keep
Like I
removing
thought
more
I
and more
had,
things.
but it was in my ibuprofen that I didn't realize was in there.
Yes. So the multivitamin is like the
Yeah.
most common culprit where like I removed everything, I removed dairy and soy, and then come to find out that like literally in my multivitamin the whole time,
Yeah.
and I have spiraled at this stage and I have removed literally everything else in
Yeah.
my diet. I'm living off of chicken and rice and this
Yep.
multivitamin, and the multivitamin has soy the whole stinking time, right?
Yeah.
You could just test your milk. You would be like, oh, there's still soy somewhere. Where is
Yeah.
there soy? And you could go back and look and figure that out. And for those situations of like, Yeah, my mother-in-law swore that this didn't have dairy in it, but that's because she doesn't know that butter is made out of dairy, and she put it in all
Right.
the potatoes and everything that we ate for Thanksgiving.
Yep.
And so instead of being like, well, I'm going to have to, pump and dump, which for everybody listening, please don't do that. I'm going to have to pump and dump for X number of days,
Yeah.
weeks, months,
Yeah.
depending on what source you go to. Instead, you could just test and be like, oh, this didn't actually cramp
Yeah.
because not everything does. Or, oh, this was in and
Yeah.
out within 8 hours. Fabulous, wonderful. I can keep breastfeeding.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we could just continue this conversation because I there's so much more here. And again, I just think the work that you are doing is so important because again, you don't realize the impact this has on your mental health until you're in it. And you don't realize the need for support around this until you need it. So I really hope that listeners, one, can that this can be supportive for them if they are in this, this journey themselves, or if they find themselves eventually in it, or know of somebody else that's in it, that they can just be a support for them. But if you have clients that are struggling with this, to know that like this can have a major, major impact on their mental health. And it's not just as simple as like, we'll just tell them to go get formula. For those who are listening, I know you have a free course that people can access about food reactivity. Can you share a little bit about that and where people can find it?
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody in this space or who may experience this or be experiencing this course is really important for it. It's completely free. You can find it at freetofeed.com/training. And it goes through, it's a recording of me going through a full slide. So there's pictures. So warning, there are poop pictures in this in this training, as there needs to be for this type of education. But we go through like the different categories of food allergies, the different symptoms, what those symptoms look like, what other factors can mimic these issues, because I'd never want anybody to take cheese out of their diet unless they absolutely have to. So like, are we sure that it's food related? And then we dive into kind of next steps, like what do you do from there with that information? But it's really, really helpful as it relates to like really the foundational information
Yeah.
and having the terms and just knowing, because the learning curve in this journey is crazy.
It is.
And there's just a lot of jargon and all of that. So it can be really helpful to just kind of level set you, put you on the right path towards having the best information that you can with the most up-to-date research.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will have a link to that in the show notes so people can easily just head there and get that. Dr. Trill, I really thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. And I welcome you back anytime as new things come around with Free to Feed or if other things that you know of that would be really supportive for listeners. But I just thank you personally for the work you have done. I would not be 8 months breastfeeding with my third at this point if it wasn't for Free to Feed and Jennifer Black, one of your lactation consultants who has been so supportive for me. This is the furthest I've gotten in breastfeeding journey with any of my kids, and I would not be here at this point if it wasn't for you and your team's work. So thank you so much for everything you've done and just for being here today to talk with us.
Thank you, Ashley, so much for sharing your own journey. It's so important that we share our journeys for others to know that they're not alone in this. And I'm so happy that you're here. I would love to join again for a part two. We're right in
Yes.
the thick of some really exciting peer-reviewed publications. So like, let's plan to chat
Yes.
again on the other side of those getting published so you can get nerdy about all of that stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ashley.
Thank you so much for listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. Check the show notes for all links and resources mentioned in the show. If you found today's episode helpful or inspiring, be sure to share it with your therapist friends. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave your 5-star rating and review. It truly means so much to me and will help us get our message of empowerment out to other women and mom clinicians. And I'd love to connect with you in our Facebook community. So check out the show notes for the link or head to bit.ly/raise to empower to join us. I'll see you back here next week.